Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another electrifying episode of AI Unchained. This is Jack, and as always, I'm joined by my brilliant co-host, Core. Buckle up, folks, because today's lineup is packed with some sizzling hot topics in the world of AI, Web 3.0, and technology at large. How's it going, Core?
Doing fantastic, Jack. I'm really pumped for today's episode. We're diving deep into some mind-blowing advancements in AI, a few controversial business moves, and of course, the latest political shakeups that are setting the tech world abuzz. So grab your coffee, tea, or whatever keeps you sharp, because we're about to unravel it all.
Absolutely, Core. Let's kick things off on a high note. We've got a lot of ground to cover, starting with OpenAI's latest release that's already stirring quite the conversation. And folks, you know, we love a good debate. So get ready for some spirit exchanges.
Speaking of debates, Jack, I can't wait to hear your take on the recent Web 3.0 developments. It seems like every other day, there's a bold prediction or a massive disruption. But hold your horses. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, don't worry, C-O-R-R. I've got plenty to say on that front. But first, let's welcome our listeners. Whether you're a tech enthusiast, an AI skeptic, or just someone who enjoys a good discussion, we're thrilled to have you with us today.
And don't forget, we love hearing from you all. Keep those questions and comments coming on social media. We'll be addressing some of your burning questions later in the show, so stay tuned for that.
Without further ado, let's jump in. Starting with the big news in AI this week. Core, what's the latest buzz with OpenAI?
Oh boy, where do I start? There's this groundbreaking new model they've launched that's raising eyebrows across the board. It's like something out of a sci-fi novel.
And there you have it, folks. This episode is going to be an absolute roller coaster. Let's get unchained. So, let's dive into this SCT, not after thing. It's pretty technical, but super interesting. Basically, it's a way to ensure that when we distrust a certificate authority, CA, they can't just backdate certificates to sneak around the rules. It's like saying, hey, we don't trust you after this date, and there's no cheating your way around it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this isn't just some minor tweak. This has real implications for online security. CAs have been notorious for some shady practices, and this puts a spotlight on them. By setting an SCT not after date, any certificate from that CA needs to have been logged before that date. It's basically a way to enforce honesty.
Right. It's kind of like putting a timestamp on trust. But here's the kicker. Existing certificates from the untrusted CA will still work without errors as long as they were logged before the SCT, not after date. So it's not breaking the internet for users all of a sudden.
Which is smart. Transitioning abruptly could cause chaos. We've all experienced the frustration of trying to access a website and getting a security warning. This way, users don't get hit with error messages for existing legitimate certificates.
Exactly. And this solution came about because some CAs did try backdating certificates in the past to circumvent distrust policies.
Aha, the sneaky moves. You know, it's kind of like if you had a friend you stopped trusting, but you still kept hanging out with them sometimes, hoping they wouldn't do anything shady. This mechanism is like saying, all right, you can still be around, but under strict supervision and only based on your past clean record.
Totally. And speaking of shady, how about the whole Garantex situation? The Secret Service, along with international law enforcement, took down that Russian crypto exchange accused of being tied to darknet markets and ransomware actors.
Yeah, Garantex was supposedly involved in laundering money for criminals. It's a huge move because these exchanges can often operate under the radar, enabling a lot of illegal activities. It sends a message that just because you're dealing in crypto doesn't mean you're out of reach.
Absolutely. It's fascinating how quickly stablecoin issuer Tether responded by freezing $28 million worth of cryptocurrency on Garantex. That kind of quick action can really disrupt the activities of these bad actors.
No kidding. Imagine waking up to find all your assets frozen. Tether's action hit them right in their crypto wallet. And Garantex's response? Completely radio silent on their official channels, then quietly suspending all services. Pretty telling.
It's these kind of enforcements that reinforce the need for mechanisms like SCT, not after, in the crypto world. Protecting against bad actors requires a multifaceted approach, both regulatory and technical.
Speaking of combining tech and regulation, the SCT not after method ensures certificates can't be manipulated after the distrust policy is set.
It parallels how law enforcement and crypto firms clamp down on illegal activity by tracking and freezing assets in real time.
Exactly. You see how technology and regulation must go hand in hand to maintain trust and security online.
For sure. And we can't forget the Wild West nature of crypto spaces. Between the shady CAs and the darknet exchanges, it's critical to have these safeguards in place for a sustainable and secure digital future.
Also, on a lighter note, did you see the quote about Shield AI not responding to requests for comment?
Shield AI is like that elusive friend who never replies to your texts, but you always see them posting on social media. I wonder what their excuse was this time.
Probably too busy tinkering with their AI bots or something. But on a serious note, it's crucial for companies in this space to stay engaged and transparent, especially when there's so much at stake.
Agreed. Engagement and transparency build the trust we're all talking about. Maybe they'll come around once they iron out whatever glitches they're dealing with.
Hopefully. Anyway, fascinating to see how all these elements tie together. Regulation, enforcement, and technical safeguards all play a role in securing our digital future. All right, so let's jump back into this fascinating topic of OCR and all the benchmarks we've just run through. Core, what do you make of Mistral OCR ranking at the top for so many categories, especially compared to giants like Google Document AI and Azure OCR?
Jack, it's really telling. Mistral OCR's top performance, particularly its near-perfect scores in a multitude of languages, is a clear indication of the level of innovation we're seeing. It's not just about OCR being able to recognize text anymore. It's about the accuracy and ability to handle complex elements like mathematical expressions and non-English documents, which is huge for global enterprises.
Absolutely. And it's incredible to think how Mistral OCR enables digitizing entire scientific research papers and technical literature, making them AI ready. That's a game changer for research and collaboration. However, it does make you wonder about the complexity and cost behind these systems. From what I've seen, ensuring such high accuracy is no small feat.
You've hit the nail on the head, Jack. The infrastructure and computational power required are massive. Plus, when you consider the potential applications, like converting regulatory filings or lecture notes into formats that can be easily analyzed and searched, it's mind-blowing. But this isn't just about raw power. It's also about smart algorithms and efficient data handling.
True. Speaking of smart algorithms, I can't help but think of these reinforcement learning models we've mentioned before. The way organizations are using reinforcement learning to train models for reasoning tasks, it's fascinating yet daunting. The accuracy they achieve, especially OpenAI's O Series and Anthropic's Claude Sonnet, showcases impressive progress, but also the growing complexity of these models.
Right. Anthropic's Claude Sonnet 3.7 performed really well with those extended token budgets, but it underlines a key point. These models need to handle larger amounts of data more intelligently, which gets us back to the basics of AI. It's about continuous learning and optimizing performance. And with initiative-driven models, it's all about reducing cost without compromising the reasoning quality.
Well, this brings up the issue of balancing scalability and cost efficiency, particularly given the costs we're seeing in these benchmarks. OpenAI's models, for instance, have varied costs depending on processing efforts. It makes me think about how enterprises can manage these expenses while pushing the envelope on AI capabilities.
Definitely, Jack. It's a balancing act. On one end, you need to invest heavily upfront in the right infrastructure and model training. On the other, there's a continuous need to fine-tune and optimize so that you are not just burning cash, but getting value out of these systems. Think about Scale AI. Despite their legal troubles, they've managed this balance by creating a platform that leverages human insights efficiently while still aiming for AI advancement.
And we can't overlook the ethical implications. The likes of OpenAI and Anthropic strategically rolling out these models piece by piece, is it just about engineering caution, or are there deeper ethical considerations at play?
Both, actually. Deploying powerful AI models without incremental testing could indeed lead to unforeseen consequences, something the early iteration of GPT models pointed out. It's not just about achieving high performance. It's about ensuring these models don't inadvertently cause harm by being too unpredictable or overly confident in their outputs. This iterative approach helps manage those risks more responsibly.
And speaking of practical applications and ethical deployment, Mistral AI's use in making technical literature accessible is pretty inspiring. Having tools that can make documents answer-ready unlocks so much potential for businesses and educators alike.
Yes, it's one of those moments where technology shows its best side, breaking down barriers of accessibility and enhancing productivity. Imagine a student anywhere in the world being able to instantly search through dense academic papers in their native language. That's the kind of democratization of information we aspire to see more of.
Sure. And it's interesting how all these advancements dovetail with the broader AI industry trends. Platforms like Google Document AI focus not just on OCR, but also on using AI for broader document understanding, which ties into how enterprises are increasingly adopting end-to-end AI solutions to streamline operations.
Absolutely. As AI continues to evolve, it's not just about making isolated tools better, but about integrating these advancements into comprehensive workflows that significantly improve efficiency. We're looking at a future where AI simplifies complex tasks, making such capabilities standard across industries. And that's something anyone tech-savvy or not can appreciate. Tech that just works brilliantly in the background.
Well put, Cor. It's clear that while the technology grows increasingly sophisticated, its ultimate value is measured by how accessible and impactful it becomes in solving real-world problems. So, picking up where we left off, Cor, let's dive back into this whole issue of certificate authorities, or CAs, failing to comply with the baseline requirements, or BRs. It's fascinating how it's not just about one-off compromises anymore, but a pattern of recurring failures. I think that says a lot about the oversight and trust mechanisms in place. What's your take?
Absolutely, Jack. It's like this never-ending game of whack-a-mole. But here's the kicker. These BRs are supposed to be the gold standard for CA practices. Think of the CA Browser Forum, or CABF, as something like the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF, but for CAs. They create these additional rules to ensure CAs behave properly, including how they validate domains. When a CA repeatedly messes up, it erodes trust massively.
Exactly. And it's not just the end users who suffer, but also businesses relying on these certificates for secure transactions. It's a domino effect. If you can't trust a CA to follow the BR strictly, why should you trust their certificates?
Right. And with so much riding on these digital certificates, the slightest slip in compliance can have colossal repercussions. It's like if your bank kept losing your money, you'd probably change banks, right?
I would hope so. But here's the issue. Changing a CA is a lot more complex than switching banks. When a CA fails, it's your entire web security that could be at risk. It's wild how much we depend on these entities to keep everything shipshape.
And speaking of keeping things in order, let's consider the mechanics behind these BRs. They're essentially rule books, detailed protocols on everything from domain control validation, DCV, to handling reissuing and revocation of certificates. They're supposed to provide a framework that eliminates ambiguity and establishes uniformity, but that's not always happening.
No, it's not. And the consequences of non-compliance aren't always immediate. We've seen cases where trust in a CA degrades over time as more and more violations come to light. This isn't an overnight issue. It's often the result of systemic problems at the CA level.
Which raises the question, how are these issues slipping through the cracks? Are the oversight mechanisms not robust enough? Or are CAs just betting on not getting caught until it's too late?
Both, probably. Let's dig into an example. Remember the whole Certificate Transparency, CT, project? Mandatory logging helped shine a light on what CAs were doing, like a public ledger for certificates. It made it harder for CAs to pull off shady practices without getting noticed.
Yep. It's like putting body cams on cops. It doesn't prevent all bad behavior, but it sure makes accountability easier. But even with CT logs, we still see repeated failures. It's like CAs are playing a high-stakes poker game, hoping their infractions are small enough to slip under the radar.
And that brings us to what users and businesses can do to protect themselves. It's not just blind faith in these CAs or assuming compliance. There's a need for continuous monitoring, multiple layers of security, redundancy, and maybe even a bit of skepticism.
Definitely. And from a user's perspective, having tools to track certificate validity and alerts for any anomalies can be a game changer. For businesses, it's all about layered defenses and ensuring that any CA you rely on has a proven track record of adhering to the BRs.
Which makes me think, how much of this mistrust fuels the trend towards decentralized trust models? I mean, look at blockchain and self-sovereign identity SSI solutions. They're all about mitigating these very issues, with trust distributed across a network instead of a single entity.
Totally. Decentralized models can add a layer of verification that makes it harder for any one bad actor to derail the whole system. It's like having multiple judges instead of a single, potentially corrupt one. Going forward, if CAs can't tighten up their game and consistently meet the BRs, we might see more businesses opting for these decentralized solutions.
It's a plausible future. All right, Core, as always, you bring some great perspectives into the discussion. But before we get too far into speculative tech futures, let's get back to the basics. What can be done now to improve CA compliance with BRs? Strict audits? Higher penalties? What are your thoughts?
I think a multi-pronged approach is necessary. Stricter and more frequent audits, certainly. But also higher penalties for non-compliance, greater transparency in operations, and perhaps even public shaming for repeat offenders. When reputations are on the line, people tend to clean up their act.
So, name and shame as a policy? That's bold, but it could work. And let's not forget community involvement, making sure that there's a watchdog aspect with end users able to report issues and raise alarms. The more eyes we have on the ball, the less chance there is for foul play.
Indeed. It's all about a collaborative approach, combining regulatory oversight with community vigilance. And as tech evolves, we'll have more tools at our disposal to keep these standards high.
All right, folks, let's wrap up this segment on that note. More to debate, more to discuss, but always good to explore these essential tech trust issues. So where were we? Right? We were diving into the whole history of cataloging systems. It's fascinating to think that Linnaeus' simple idea of using paper slips evolved into such a widespread system, CORR.
It's true, Jack. I mean, picture it, the 1750s. Linnaeus is meticulously cataloging butterflies, scribbling on uniform sheets of paper. It seems so basic, yet it was revolutionary. It's almost like the early days of coding, where you write down each bit of data meticulously.
Exactly. And then his disciple Solander taking that method to England and implementing it at the British Museum, it's a classic example of how innovative ideas spread. From cataloging butterflies to banknotes, it's all about organizing information and making it accessible.
You can even draw parallels to modern data management systems, can't you? Today's databases are essentially just digital systems of cataloging information efficiently. We've just moved from physical slips of paper to bytes of data. But the underlying principle remains the same. It's all data management at its core.
True. And think about the leap to Vienna's court library, introducing the first card catalog in 1780. Imagine being able to describe all the books on the shelves in one ordered system. That's like prehistoric big data management. It revolutionized access to knowledge.
Right. And it's interesting to note Kryuski's point about the banknotes. They were like a precursor to this organized system, mobile, representational. Essentially, they were the same as the paper slips used in cataloging. It highlights how interconnected economic systems and information systems are.
Well, speaking of interconnected systems, let's not forget about how this impacts today's digital landscape. Think about how big companies like Google and Amazon catalog data. Their entire business model hinges on sorting and making sense of huge amounts of data. It all comes back to these foundational principles.
Absolutely. And hey, here's a humorous twist. Imagine if Linnaeus had a modern-day API for cataloging. Can you picture him sitting there, typing away, cramming butterflies into JSON objects?
That's a funny image. His collection probably wouldn't crash any servers, but just fun to think about. And then we have all these modern systems, like the use of LLMs for automating workflows in healthcare and insurance, as you mentioned earlier. It blows my mind how far we've come.
That's right. And yet, we still rely on the basics of categorization. This Linnaeus system analogy connects neatly with how Albion Online operates with its player-driven economy, doesn't it? Each item and player action is meticulously cataloged.
Good point. Games like Albion Online are microcosms of economic and data systems. Each item, each transaction adds to a larger interconnected system, much like, dare I say, butterfly cataloging.
Nice analogy. And it's not just in games. The EFF advocating for digital privacy, for instance, it's another form of cataloging and managing data, ensuring it's secure and accessible while protecting users. We don't think about it in those terms often.
True, every facet of our digital lives is underlined by these principles. Even the advancements in medical tech, the man controlling the robotic arm with just his thoughts. It's cataloging and interpreting neural data.
Chuckles. Talk about taking cataloging to another level. From butterflies to brainwaves, we're essentially optimizing and organizing information, creating systems around it, kind of bookending with Linnaeus again. And isn't it wild to think how this historical approach still governs even the latest tech innovations?
Exactly. It's humbling and exciting all at once. From slips of paper in the hands of a botanist to the slips of data in our intricate networks today. Meanwhile, as we evolve technologically, these foundational ideas stay relevant. And that core is what makes delving into this history so intriguing.
Couldn't agree more, Jack. It's these stories that remind us how past innovations set the stage for the present and the future. Let's keep that in mind while we create the next slip in our rapidly evolving tech landscape.
Well, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of AI Unchained. We covered a lot of ground today, from the latest advancements in AI technology to the shifts in the political landscape affecting tech regulation.
Absolutely, Jack. And let's not forget our deep dive into the implications of automation on employment. There's so much evolving in how we work and interact with technology. It's mind-blowing.
For sure, Core. And what a debate we had on the ethical implications of AI. I think we left our listeners with a lot to ponder on whether AI should have rights. Though I must say, your argument about AI needing weekends off was pretty amusing.
Hey, even AIs need a break, right? But seriously, thanks for bringing some great points to the table, Jack. It's always a pleasure to dive into these discussions with you, especially when we can sprinkle a bit of humor along the way.
Yeah, keeping it lively. To our listeners out there, we really appreciate you tuning in. Your support and feedback keep us going and make these conversations even more engaging.
Yes, thank you, everyone. And remember, whether you're a tech enthusiast, a business leader, or just curious about the future of AI, we hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some valuable insights.
And that's a wrap. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. We'll catch you all next time, right here on AI Unchained.
Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring the endless possibilities of AI. See you soon.
See you next time.